searching podcasts for the Daily Perspective. Okay, the Daily Perspective podcast coming up.
Hello and welcome in to this Friday edition of the Daily Perspective podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Hoping you are having a marvelous day and that you've had a good week and that you and yours are doing well. Here we are on the 11th day of September 2020. Remembering the 11th day of September from 19 years ago. Now, I'm not going to spend the entire podcast talking about 9/11, but I do want to spend the first segment talking about 9/11 because this is a day which is extremely important in the history of our nation. A day when we learned that there were people beyond our shores willing to cross our borders and hurt us. And hurt us badly. And it's something we should never, ever forget, that there are those outside of our borders who believe that way and want to see us hurt. And today, 19 years later, there are those within our borders who hate what this country stands for and want it destroyed and rebuilt in their image. We need to remember this day so that we will remember what is precious about this nation and the good this nation has done around the world. And in spite of that, there are people who choose to believe lies and wish to destroy what you and I hold so precious. It's a day we don't need to forget. Nineteen years ago on this morning, I was working with my radio partner, Dave Mack. We were doing the usual thing, the usual radio shtick. We were having fun, laughing about the oddness in life around us, sharing stupid criminal stories, wacky news, and just laughing about life. And we got a phone call from Dave's wife, LaDonna, who said, "You guys need to turn on a television. Something's going on." Well, this was back before the days that there were televisions in radio broadcast control rooms. So there was a television in the station, which we went and brought to the studio and hooked up. At that time, there was no cable in the building, so we were using the rabbit ears on the TV. Fortunately, we were very close to the broadcast television towers, so we could get good reception of local television. And when we tuned it in, we saw people talking about a plane flying into one of the World Trade Center towers, the North Tower. It was struck at 8:46 a.m. As we watched, I commented to Dave, this sounds familiar to me. This has happened before. It was a long time ago. A large military plane lost in the fog flew into a big building. This could have been an accident. And then 17 minutes later, with the TV on, the South Tower was struck. And I turned to Dave and said, "We're under attack." This is terrorism. A little over half an hour later, the Pentagon was struck at 9:37 a.m. At 9:59 a.m., the South Tower collapsed. At 10:07, Flight 93 crashed into a field in Pennsylvania. Taken down by passengers who had heard what was going on, who knew that they were in trouble, they were being hijacked, and who said, "We will not go down without a fight." And then finally at 10:28 a.m., the North Tower collapsed. The images of that day, for those of us who were around at the time and watching, are etched into our minds, and we'll never forget them. The dust of the collapsed buildings choking the streets of New York. People covered in dust and ash, stumbling through the haze, trying to find someplace safe to go. The firefighters rushing toward the destruction. The police officers standing and trying to help as many people as they could. The bravery of those stood out to us at the time. And I don't think any of us will ever forget the images of those spires. The remains of the towers. Those steel rails sticking into the sky. A ragged testimony to the evil done to us on that day. And for 19 years, people have gathered in New York to read the names of the lives lost. They're doing so right now as I record this in my studio. Right now. We should never forget what happened on this day. And we should share the story with those who come behind us. Because there are many alive today who were not alive then. I was thinking this morning that we've just watched a high school class of seniors graduate who weren't born at that time. They weren't alive. So it's up to you and I to tell them the story, to sit them down, to show them the videos, to help them understand why it happened, and not the conspiracy theory wacko versions of why it happened, but why it happened really. And to share with them how this nation dropped all of its pretense of partisanship and party loyalty and everything else that divides us. And we embraced each other and stood strong together. On the day after, we were one nation. On the day after, we really were America. We were the United States. And many of us swore at that time never to forget what that was like. I hope you were one of them. We swore that we would never forget what it was like to shove petty partisan policies and partisanship aside and just do what was best for America. And sadly, today, 19 years later, there are those who have decided that the petty partisanship is all that matters. All that matters is destroying people who disagree with them. They forget that even though we have done a lot to take these people down, there are still some hiding in their dark corners, who, given the opportunity, would reenact 9/11. And there are some in cities in the United States of America today who, if they saw planes flying into buildings in New York City, would cheer. And throw their Molotov cocktails and abuse the police officers trying to protect their city. They live among us today. 19 years later, most of us have forgotten the lessons we learned on 9/11. Most of us have forgotten what it was like to be an American on 9/12. Most of us have been deceived by the partisanship and the division and don't remember what it was really like. And so it's extremely important for us to remember what it was really like. It's also important for us to remember that today and then, the mainstream press was not interested in telling the truth. They were interested in damaging a president, because then we had a Republican president, President George W. Bush. On the morning of this day in 2001, President George W. Bush was at Emma E. Booker Elementary School in Sarasota County, Florida. He was reading a book called The Pet Goat to inner city first graders, and listening as the children recited the story back to him. While on his way from his hotel to the school in his motorcade, an aide called him to report that a passenger jet had crashed into the North Tower at 8:46 a.m. Bush said he initially believed that the crash was an accident caused perhaps by pilot error. At 9:06 a.m., Andrew Card, the White House chief of staff, entered the classroom. Without alarming the children, he quietly told the president that a second airplane had struck the South Tower and that the nation was under attack. President Bush remained seated for 7 more minutes, following along as the children finished reading the book. He then commended them on their reading skills and encouraged them to continue to read more and to watch less television. He then posed for photos with the children, their teacher, and school administrators. While cameras clicked, a pool reporter asked him if he was aware of the attacks. He replied, "I'll talk about it later." He was then led into an empty classroom where he watched updated news reports and consulted with Vice President Dick Cheney and the New York Governor George Pataki. Still on the school grounds at 9:29 a.m., Bush made the first of what would be several statements he would make on that day about the unfolding events. A week later, Bush recalled to reporters that, "I'm sitting in the midst of a classroom with little kids, listening to a children's story, and I realize I'm the commander-in-chief and the country has just come under attack." The progressive press at the time condemned him for sitting in that classroom and not doing something. The progressive press of that time tore him to shreds for sitting there for 7 more minutes. What was he doing in those 7 minutes? Why wasn't he helping the country in those 7 minutes? He was doing exactly what he should have done in those 7 minutes. Not frightening little children by rushing into action for something they couldn't understand. We have a president today who's done very much the same thing with the pandemic. Not frightening the nation unduly, and the press are taking him apart as well. One lesson we can learn from 9/11 and today is that the press doesn't care.
You're listening to the Daily Perspective Podcast.
Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Friday, the 11th day of September, 2020. I hope you're well. Hope you and your family are good. You and yours are doing great. And that you've got great plans for your weekend ahead. It's going to be a good one. I know it is. Oh, man. Hang on here. I need to finish. Click, click, click. All right. That's done. I just wanted to share something to social media before I move forward. I was in the midst of it when everything came back into focus here again. By now, you've probably heard that more than 24 phones belonging to members of Special Counsel Robert Mueller's team were wiped clean. Wiped clean of data before the Justice Department's Inspector General could comb them for records. This is according to records released yesterday. At least 27 cell phones were wiped of data before the DOJ Inspector General could review them. Some of them reset to factory settings. Some wiped accidentally after the wrong password was entered too many times. That's according to 87 pages of DOJ records regarding the phones issued to members of the special counsel's office, including mobile phones that were reassigned. The special counsel's office wiped a total of 31 phones. A phone belonging to Assistant Special Counsel James Quarles wiped itself without intervention from him, according to DOJ records. Right. Andrew Weissman, the top prosecutor on Mueller's team, accidentally wiped his cell phone, causing the data to be lost. Other members of the team also accidentally wiped their phones, according to the DOJ. Phones issued to at least three other Mueller prosecutors, Kyle Freeney, Rush Atkinson, and senior prosecutor Greg Andres, were also wiped of data. Additionally, the cell phone of FBI lawyer Lisa Page was misplaced by the special counsel's office. While it was eventually obtained by the DOJ Inspector General, by that point, the phone had been restored to its factory settings, wiping it of all data. The phone of FBI agent Peter Strzok was also obtained by the Inspector General's office, which found no substantive texts, notes, or reminders on it. Strzok and Page texted each other about their aversion to Donald Trump during the 2016 presidential election cycle. In their messages to each other, Strzok and Page, who were carrying on an extramarital affair at the time, both called them the then-candidate Trump an idiot and made vague mention of an insurance policy to ensure he would not be elected. Critics have speculated that the insurance policy referred to the investigation of potential ties between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. But the two former FBI officials have denied that suggestion. In March of last year, Mueller submitted his final report to Attorney General William Barr on the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 election. The report, a redacted version of which was released to Congress and the public the next month, concluded that the Trump campaign did not conspire with Russians to influence the election, but said investigators could not reach a conclusion on whether President Trump committed obstruction of justice. Facing the Justice Department's frustration that he left the question of obstruction open in his final report, Mueller said in May last year that charging Trump with a crime was not an option, since, per guidance issued by the Justice Department's official legal counsel, a sitting president can't be indicted. Wiped cell phones. 31 of them. At least 27 wiped of data before the DOJ Inspector General could review them. Wiped clean. It seems like as every week goes by, we learn of some other skullduggery that went on revolving around the Mueller investigation. That those involved seriously didn't want us to know what they were up to. That they preferred to hide their actions to keep us from knowing what they were actually trying to do. But it doesn't take a master's degree or any certificate of genius to realize these people were trying to find a way to unelect a president because their candidate was not elected, and their way of life, which has gone on for decades in Washington, D.C., was in danger of being exposed. You see, most of us pay no attention to what's going on in Washington, D.C. until it's time to see what's happening with the presidential race. And then most of us treat it like it's a sporting event and we're pulling for a team. We're not really paying attention to what's going on behind the scenes. This is what goes on behind the scenes. 27 cell phones wiped clear of data before they could be reviewed by the DOJ Inspector General. Why? Because they contained incriminating data? Because they contained information which would have incriminated people involved in the investigation? Which would have shown the bald partisanship going on in the investigation? And the deep desire by some to undermine the credibility and the worthiness of a president elected by the people of the United States of America. That's why. And that's something we have to face today. The fact that there are people working in the halls of government in Washington, D.C., in this nation we love and we care about, who think we're too stupid to make a decision on our own, who think that they must correct our error, which is what this was all about. In fact, it's been the Democrat goal since the election to discredit, to undermine, to demonize the person chosen by the people of the United States of America because they believe we're too stupid to make this decision. We made a mistake, and that mistake must be corrected. These people wholeheartedly believe that they hold the answers for this country, that this country is deeply flawed from its founding, and that it must be corrected. And that everything we hold dear must be undermined, torn down, and rebuilt. Why?
Change will not come if we wait for some other person or if we wait for some other time. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
These people believe that they are the ones who are going to fundamentally transform the United States of America into something it was never intended to be. Never.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
The United States of America was not founded on racist values. The United States of America is not systemically racist. The United States of America and its people are not racist at the core. The United States of America literally is a beacon of hope for the world. If it falls, the last hope for the world falls. The cold, hard truth of things is that around the world, people are scrimping, scraping, saving, selling off their belongings, getting together the money they need to come to the United States of America. Legally and illegally, they're flooding into this country every place there's an opening because it's better here than it is anywhere else. And yet, there are those behind the scenes in Washington, D.C., wiping their cell phones of incriminating data because they firmly believe that everything about America is wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And these people, it's important, these people must be rooted out. It's been happening for almost 4 years now. Little by little, person by person, these people are being discovered and moved out of the system. The swamp is being drained. It's not being drained very quickly, but it is being drained. And it's important to remember that the guy in charge of the draining process is under attack. He's being attacked by the people who are in the deepest danger from the draining process. Because as the level in the swamp gets lower and lower, we see more and more of what's been hidden. And those people are frightened. They're scared. And scared progressives become dangerous progressives, which is why you're seeing what you're seeing even now as people come forward and misrepresent and bald-faced lie about the President of the United States in order to defeat his chances of staying in office for another 4 years.
You are listening to the Daily Perspective Podcast.
Welcome back. It's the Friday, September 11th version of the podcast. Great to have you along. Thanks a lot for listening, for sharing, for being part of the fam. Hope you got a good weekend ahead of you. I know what I'll be doing this weekend. I'll be underneath a car. No. My wife didn't finally decide to run me over in the driveway. I'll be pulling the transmission on the Miata, replacing the throwout bearing and the pilot bearing and the clutch. And hopefully that will solve some of the problems I've been having with it. But I've got it up on stands. It's ready to roll. I just got to slip up under it and start wrenching. And that's what will be happening as soon as I get today's edition of the podcast in the can. And once it's uploaded and distributed, bing, there we go. I'll be sliding into the garage and getting greasy again. It never ends. It just never ends. Wowzer, wowzer. Let's see here. What are we? Okay, let's go back over here. One of the things that's happening right now in America is we're being pushed on this concept of mail-in voting. And sane voices are trying to raise a red flag. Sane voices are trying to set off alarms, set off sirens. Whoa, wait a minute. Sane voices are trying to speak sanity to America and let them know this is a problem. This is not something that is secure. It's not something that works flawlessly. It's not something you can trust. It's going to cause big problems. On the flip side, you've got the liberals, the progressives, saying that those of us who are trying to raise the warning flag are trying to disenfranchise voters. And oddly, what's actually going to happen is, yes, voters will be disenfranchised. Voters whose ballots don't get counted because they're lost in the shuffle. They made a tiny error on their ballot that disqualifies it. Something, and I can say this because it has happened time and again across America with ballots which are sent through the mail. It's happened so often, and already we're seeing problems with the current vote-by-mail system being implemented state-by-state across America. People are receiving multiple ballots at their home addresses for people who used to live there but no longer live there, for former owners, and for people who have moved out onto their own. We are seeing these reports happen across America. It's happening. The system is deeply fallible. And yet, they're defending it and saying those of us who are telling you not to trust it are trying to disenfranchise voters. Well, what about those voters whose ballots went to addresses they no longer live at? They won't receive those ballots. They won't be voting. What about those disenfranchised voters? And they're trying to conflate two things. They're trying to make you think that their vote-by-mail system is absentee balloting. It is not absentee voting. What the Democrats are pushing across America today is not traditional absentee voting. President Trump has said absentee voting is a good thing. He does it every year. He is a resident of Florida. He's living in Washington, D.C. He votes absentee. It's a system he can trust because he's seen it works. But the vote-by-mail system is not absentee balloting. Former President Jimmy Carter fired back. He's supporting mail-in voting. He did so after Attorney General William Barr's disapproval of the voting practice. President Carter released a brief statement in support of absentee ballots, as he also confirmed he personally votes using the absentee balloting method. Last Thursday, he said, "I approve the use of absentee ballots and have been using them for more than 5 years." Additionally, he cited the 2005 Commission on Federal Election Reform, a study he co-chaired. The former president's remarks came shortly after Attorney General William Barr's appearance on CNN last week. During an exclusive interview with Wolf Blitzer, Barr suggested that he is in support of President Donald Trump's assertions, as he claimed the possible expansion of mail-in voting would be similar to playing with fire. Quote, we're a very closely divided country here, and people have to have confidence in the legitimacy of the government. People trying to change the rules of this to this methodology, which as a matter of logic is very open to fraud and coercion, is reckless and dangerous, and people are playing with fire. Talking about Carter's 2005 Commission on Federal Election Reform, Barr claimed it found mail-in voting is fraught with the risk of fraud and coercion. Carter's latest remarks came months after the release of a previous statement back in May, where he verbalized his support of mail-in ballots. At the time, Carter also referenced the findings of that same 2005 Nonpartisan Commission on Federal Election Reform, which he co-chaired with former Secretary of State James A. Baker III. The study, which advocated for the federal and state expansion of mail-in voting, determined that there was little evidence of voter fraud when proper precautions are in place. Those words are key here, by the way, my friend. When proper precautions are in place. Quote, the commission's main recommendation on vote-by-mail and absentee voting were to increase research on vote-by-mail and early voting and to eliminate the practice of allowing candidates or party workers to pick up and deliver absentee ballots. That's according to the statement. Now, that is a description of ballot harvesting. Ballot harvesting is the gateway to all evil when it comes to the vote. Ballot harvesting is why staunchly conservative Orange County, California, suddenly in 2018 became represented completely by Democrats. The statement goes on to say the commission's main recommendations on vote-by-mail and absentee voting were to increase research on vote-by-mail and early voting and to eliminate the practice. I just told you about that. White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany also pushed back against the commission. Carter referenced, as she claimed on last Thursday, that he said in 2005, as part of a bipartisan commission, absentee ballots remained the largest source of potential voter fraud. You see, every time it's studied, they come to the same conclusion. It is the largest source of potential voter fraud. President Carter should be very clear on the difference between the absentee voting system, and there is a system in place. You request the ballot. It's not just pumped out to you. You, from your address, request the ballot. The ballot is sent to your address. You fill the ballot out, and then you, from your address, of your own free will, send it back. It's all initiated and run by you. You make every decision regarding it. The other way around is very progressive. The progressive politicians make every decision for you, except who you vote for. And then they don't protect it. They don't assure that your vote actually will be counted. It's a really bizarre system. It's fraught with problems. And it is not absentee. It's not absentee balloting. It's just not. They're trying to confuse the two and make the two seem the same. But they're not. They're different things entirely. It's as if they are claiming that your ride to the airport for the flight you have to meet at a specific time is exactly the same whether you have chartered a limousine service or your cousin Vinny is picking you up in his ancient Pinto, which sometimes runs. They're not the same. Not at all. And we need to remember that. They're trying to steal an election. That's what it all boils down to. And unless we are aware of it and we do what it takes to negate their efforts, they may get away with it. So here's what I suggest. If you can't be in your home state for the election, request an absentee ballot. Get the absentee ballot. Fill the absentee ballot out and send it and take it back to the registrar's office. Hand deliver it yourself so that you see it goes into their hands. If you can be, if you are going to be in your home state for the election, vote in person. If you're afraid of germs, mask your little self up and go. They'll all be practicing social distancing. They'll all have rules they have to go by. Vote in person. This is what we should all be doing, if at all possible. If your district makes it impossible to vote in person, do not vote by mail with the ballot they send you. Request an absentee ballot. Get an absentee. If you have to go to the registrar's office to get one in person, do that. Take every step possible to make sure that your vote really is counted. And here's why. Because on election night, it's extremely important that Donald Trump win the electoral votes necessary to cross that line and declare victory. Because there are only so many electoral college votes. He has to have 270 of them in order to win. If he can secure 270 electoral college votes on election night, counting the mail-in vote means nothing. If he crosses the finish line with the right number of votes, it doesn't matter how many mail-in votes there are for anybody. So let's make that happen. The way you make that happen? Vote in person or request an absentee ballot.
This is the Daily Perspective Podcast.
Welcome back. Dropping into the final segment for this Friday, the 11th day of September, 2020. 19 years after 9/11. Scanning social media, there are a lot of posts today. Almost all of them are about 9/11. And thanks to Andrew McLean. Andrew's another podcaster. He hosts a show on a local station where I live. He posted the raw images, the raw pictures of the damage to the towers. And he says, to a time where we were one team, with one national anthem, under one flag, one nation under God, loving our neighbor and unified for one common purpose, we will never forget. That's what I was talking about earlier. The way it was the day after, 9/12, should be the way it is today. Sadly, it is not. We live in a nation divided. We live in a nation where the progressives have decided that they have pushed the edge of the envelope far enough that they can get away with all kinds of things. You're probably aware of what's happening with Netflix right now and the Cuties film, which is, it's this sexualization of children, these little 11-year-old girls. And I don't know if you've seen some of the clips that have come out of the movie, but come on. It's beyond the pale. It truly is. And I got to be honest with you, I see a lot of people objecting to things, and I kind of roll my eyes because sometimes you have to take things with a grain of salt. Well, you know, we don't really know what's going on yet because nobody's actually seen what they're talking about. And then we see it, and holy smokes. They're trying to normalize pedophilia. And this is just one more step in that process. And if you have known me for any length of time, you know I'm not a boycott person. I don't join boycotts because I think I've seen the damage that organized boycotts do. I've seen how disinformed, uninformed people can be. They just join a big cause because of emotional rage. They're just angry about something. And they want somebody to suffer for it. And I don't participate in that. I will, however, move my money if someone is doing something I object to and they continue to do something I object to. You let them know, hey, this is not cool. And if they say, well, and they start making excuses, then they can live without your money because they don't value you as a customer. And so this morning, after seeing what I've seen, reading what I've read, with the substantiation, with the reality of the situation, I terminated my Netflix account. It's gone. And I encourage you to do the same thing. But don't do it because I told you to. I don't want you to do that. I want you to go look at the footage, at the still grabs, at the imagery that's coming out of this film. It's on Netflix right now, so people are distributing clips from the film. They're recording, they're saving, they're distributing just to show you, see, this is what this is all about. And this is what I've seen, and I encourage you to seek it out. Find it for yourself. Do your own research. Look at it yourself. And then if you're not moved to negate your Netflix, if you're not moved to cancel Netflix, then I got to be honest with you, you're probably listening to the wrong podcast. You're never going to agree with me on some very substantial issues. So do your homework and do the right thing. Another example of progressive overreach in California. The people, Christians in California, are being prohibited from worshiping. Gavin Newsom, the governor there, has taken a draconian step and just said, it's not legal, you just can't do it. Well, over the weekend, last weekend, more than 12,000 people of all races and backgrounds gathered in the sweltering heat to worship at the state capitol building in Sacramento, California. They did so in defiance of Governor Gavin Newsom. He's a Democrat, progressive Democrat governor, responsible for shutting down many churches across the state and punishing those who cross the line against him. The Sacramento Bee, it's a leftist newspaper, noted that most of those who were attending weren't wearing masks. They weren't in compliance with the governor's mandates. Oh, heavens. Oh, heavens. For one thing, I don't think you can trust the Sacramento Bee to tell us the truth, just as others in the mainstream progressive press did not tell us the truth about other things that happened. For example, a recent Trump rally where they claimed most people weren't wearing masks, but when you look at the photos, it's clear most people are. But those Christians in Sacramento were not there to please the Sacramento Bee or Governor Newsom. They were there to worship. Sean Fuke, he's the organizer of the Let Us Worship rally, said America was founded on the freedom to worship. Politicians can write press releases, they can make threats, they can shut down parks, they can put up fences, but they can't stop the Church of Christ from worshiping the one true God. And so, 12,000 people showed up in Sacramento, California, in front of the Capitol building, and did what they were told not to do. And I say, good for them. Good for them. Because today we have progressives in government who are ignoring our constitutional guarantees. You see, the Constitution was not written to control you or me. It was not written to keep you or me in line. The Constitution was not written to prevent you and me from crossing boundaries and stepping out of line. It was written to keep people in government from stepping out of line and oppressing you and me. Which is why it says so many times, Congress shall not. Because the founders understood the power of politicians and understood what people who seek political position are really like. And that when they are given power, they tend to go for more. And right now, we're watching this play going on. We're watching the progressives in America doing everything they can to get their power back because they were so sure that they were still going to be in power 4 years ago. They had convinced everyone, including themselves, that they were going to win an election and that the 8 years of progressive fundamental transformation would continue. And when they didn't win, they went berserk. And they've been going berserk ever since. The riots in the cities and the over-the-top control by governors like Gavin Newsom, they're all part of the same mentality. And that is that this is a nation which is fundamentally flawed and must be fundamentally transformed. I've said this so many times, but it's always true. And that is, if you love something, you don't transform it. You restore it. So people seeking to transform the United States of America do not love the United States of America. They love an idea which is not the United States of America. and they seek to transform this nation into what they love, which is not what this nation ever was intended to be. I've used the illustration of cars before. If you really love an automobile that you've bought, you've gone out, you've scraped, you've scrimped, you've bought something that you see great potential in, if you really love that car, you love what it was when it was made, you love the design, you love the idea, you love the execution, then what you'll do is you'll do everything you can to restore it to better than it was the day it rolled off the showroom floor. You'll make sure the paint looks like you could go swimming in it. You make sure every stitch in the upholstery is right. You'll make sure the engine bay looks like it rolled off of the assembly line. But if it's just something to build on top of, that's not what you're going to do. You're going to make it into something it never was intended to be. It'll never operate the same way. It'll never be as dependable. It just won't be the same. Let's restore America. And let's have a good weekend. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?